Welcome to Tech Live. I'm Stephanie Christopher, the Managing Director for Australia and New Zealand of Vistage Worldwide. We connect CEOs and business owners of mid-sized businesses, joining a community of vibrant, ambitious CEOs and business leaders looking to gain perspectives from each other and make a real difference to their businesses, their communities, and to themselves as leaders. Welcome back to our very special Tech Live guest, Warren Hogan. For those who don't know, Warren Hogan is the MD of EQ Economics, the Chief Economic Advisor to Judo Bank, and AFR's Best Economic Forecaster for 2023. He's a regular in Australian and international media, a columnist for the Australian Financial Review, and a contributor to Sky News Australia. Warren's focus is on the Australian economy and supporting business decision-making. Warren Hogan, welcome to Tech Live.
Thanks for having me, Steph. It's great to be with you again.
It's great to have you back. Do you know, you were our very first guest on Tech Live in 2019.
Wow. Okay. That's...
And now you are our very first guest on Tech Live in our new world as part of Vistage Worldwide. So it's fantastic to have you here.
Fantastic. Thanks, Steph. It's great to be here. It's great to have been in the tech community for sort of six, 7 years now. And I must say the engagement I have with all the members and the business community in Australia just has such a big impact on my economic analysis and informing my views. So it's great to be part of the community.
It's good. Well, we always knew you were a good forecaster. We picked it. And it's great to see that you've officially won the title last year. What does that mean for you? For me personally,
having been doing this now for almost 30 years, it's great to have a scoreboard to point to. It's a very contestable space, economics, particularly forecasting. So, it's good validation. I've been a bit of out on a limb in the last few years.
Yeah.
Some of the messages haven't been easy, and techs and the members have all worked with me through this, and I've explained it. And the good thing is that I got the cash rate forecaster, number one, but also the economic forecaster. So, it's one thing to pick a number, the RBA cash rate's going up to this or down to that. But I had the story right, and that actually is, the most important thing is the story. That's why I spend so much time with tech groups for hours talking through the economic story and giving people access to what's happening out there. And it's validation for me personally. Mm. Really, you want to be one of the top three forecasters every year, not the best forecaster one year, then the worst the next.
Yeah, right.
I'll work on that. So,
your father would have been very proud, wouldn't he?
Yeah, well, he sort of basically did everything in economics except for forecasting.
Right.
He was an academic. He was on boards. He did advice to business. And he loved markets and all the stuff I did through my career. So, but he would have known it. And everyone sort of did. It's just the AFR went to the trouble of counting back and looking back and putting an article together, which I appreciate greatly that the AFR did that.
Well, huge congratulations.
Thank you.
Now let's get into it. Mm. So, love to know what you're seeing at the moment. I mean, we know I hear it from my team, I hear it from my friends, I hear it from our members about the personal pain people are experiencing right now with household cost of everything. Mm. What are you seeing and where does that fit into the bigger picture?
Yeah, so I think it's an important point you make to understand where we are right now. So this soft economy is actually all household pain. The whole slowdown in the last couple of years and last year we really felt it was because of the crunch on household disposable income. That's obviously, from my point of view, the whole economy, all households.
Yeah.
It's not even. But the reality is actually when inflation goes up the way it has, it affects everyone. Only the very, very wealthy don't feel it. So that's really what's driven the slowdown is this need to tighten belts. There's no doubt that higher interest rates have had a big impact on certain households, particularly I think first home buyers, lower income mortgage holders, But the new one is, I think, what I call the yuppies, which are your people in your 30s and 40s who've got great jobs, great incomes, but they also have massive mortgages because of how high house prices have been. And they're having to come up with a lot more cash. So the interest rates are impacting, but the big one's actually been the income tax burden, the bracket creep, which is now sort of being discussed a lot. The government's pulling in every 3 months 50% more than they were 2 years ago. It's just insane, the numbers. So anyway, this is what's driven the consumer belt tightening. That's what's driven the slowdown. And as we're sitting here now in early 24, it's the year's marching on, but the business community is feeling it, again, unevenly, but are holding up pretty well. In fact, businesses are still investing. Government's investing. We've got an infrastructure boom going on, particularly in New South Wales and Victoria, and our export markets are doing well. So we're trying to get rid of inflation, which is absolute priority. I think we're learning more and more how hideous and evil inflation is for a free market economy, a free and open society. It's all this pain it's putting into low-income earners in particular. But to do that, you need a soft period. Now, recession, we're trying to avoid. That's one way to do it quickly, is just put the economy into a deep recession. But that's, no one wants to do that. So we've got this soft landing. It's all playing out as we want to see it. We have to run the economy below its potential, create some slack, take pressure off prices, and get everything back onto an even keel. I think we're about halfway through that process.
Okay.
And the key for what we're seeing now, and the view about most economists, the Reserve Bank, probably the government, is that this will continue this year, that we're going to have a subpar economy. And inflation will eventually get back down to where we want it to be, which is about 2-2.5%.
Subpar. Can I just pick you, just for those of us here?
Mm.
What exactly does that mean, a subpar economy?
In broadest terms, it means the economy is growing below its potential. So our economy should easily grow at around 2.5%, maybe even 3% a year, which is basically population growth and a bit of productivity. This is a long-term concept. And you need to run it sort of like at 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And that 2% less than its potential, you know, means that we don't push up against capacity. We're actually through capacity given how low unemployment rate is, but we're not constantly fighting over supply chains and trying to get materials, all these things we've seen.
Yep.
So you run your economy. It's what people are calling the per capita recession, i.e. the economy is growing at 1%, but the population is growing at 1.5%. So measured in aggregate, we're all going backwards a little bit. But that's, I think, not a great way to think about it. So, a recession is an economy contracting.
Yep.
And, of course, one of the key differences is when the economy is subpar, you sort of might not get much employment growth. Unemployment might go up a bit, but people don't sort of – you don't see a lot of mass job losses or anything. Of course, in a recession, and the reason we want to avoid recessions is we see a lot of job losses, a lot of business failures, a lot of businesses
– Real pain.
And we're trying to avoid that. So far, so good.
Mm.
And the key question for me – is that can we keep the economy sort of subpar for another 6 to 12 months, which is sort of what we have to do to get inflation all the way down, because I'm starting to see evidence that it's coming back. And in a way, it shows how good our economy is. It's resilience, and it's great that people have got jobs and more people are getting jobs. But in a way, you sort of don't want to see this, because that then raises this issue is, well, has the Reserve Bank done enough? So I think as we sit here right now, my view is that the risks to the economy are that it bounces back, that inflation doesn't come down as we would want it to, and that the Reserve Bank comes into play. That's not my view. I'm still with the great bulk of forecasters who think it's happening, it's slowly playing out, and inflation's slowly coming back, and eventually the Reserve Bank will be able to take rates down a little bit, maybe later this year or early next year. That's still the right view to have.
Mm.
But the risks aren't that the economy is going to topple into recession anytime soon. The risks are that it bounces back.
You said sometime last year, I don't know if it was face-to-face with one of the events you spoke at for us later last year or if it was here on Tech Live, that we might just be able to pull off this miracle of getting through it without a recession, just managing what is clearly a delicate balance.
Mm.
And so am I hearing from you, your erring on the side of you think we'll be able to do that?
Yeah, I think it's on track, hence why that, you know, I think the last GDP numbers, which, you know, oh, they're weak, the economy's soft, oh, the RBA shouldn't have done that last rate hike. And that's not the right way to think about it. It's a beautiful set of numbers. The economy's
thanks,
soft.
Thanks, Keating. Yeah.
It has to be soft.
Yeah.
And it looks like we're on track, you know, what the RBA is calling that narrow path. But if we are starting to deviate off the path, it's actually because the economy's rebounding. And we're starting to see it overseas. We're starting to see signs of a recovery happening in parts of Europe, in the United States. And, of course, those economies are leading us. We had big lockdowns late in the pandemic in 21, and that knocked us out of whack with the rest of the world. So we're 6 months behind, which, of course, should be this great we're working to our advantage because we sort of, our policymakers anyway, should see what's coming and be able to be more preemptive and more confident. Unfortunately, that's not the way it's worked. They sort of think of we're different when we're not. We're just happening later. So we look overseas to these recoveries happening, and they've got the same problem, but their rates are higher. This is the big difference too, is that our interest rates never went up as much as other countries.
Yeah.
And therefore, they've probably got a little bit more wiggle room. So, yeah, look, we're on the narrow path still, but we need to keep this economy soft. And the dynamic I'm looking for is this softness in the consumer markets that we've seen and has been evident now for a year starts to cause some businesses to be a little bit more cautious. What is the process that happens? The process is that cost pressures are still elevated. And what I'm looking for is, in a soft economy, business struggle to pass on those cost pressures. Therefore, they become a profit event, and that's obviously a big driver of investment and hiring. And again, not even. Every business will be different. Every industry will be different. But we just get a little bit of a pullback on investment, a little bit of a pullback on hiring that keeps the economy soft, inflation, and, of course, the act of not being able to pass on those cost pressures is that inflation coming down.
Yeah.
The problem is if the economy is actually okay and businesses can pass on the cost pressures, that's inflation not coming down. And that's going to raise questions about whether the interest rate's right. Okay. And that's why this discussion we've seen in recent weeks from the government and the Treasurer about, you know, pivoting to helping support a weak economy, that's just code for I'm talking about a weak economy because I want to chuck money around ahead of an election, which is the last thing we
need. Well, that's what I was going to say. There's an election coming sometime in the next 12 months.
12 months is when it's due, and it could happen earlier. But
well, that's right. So that is another sort of big variable, isn't it, in this whole delicate
It dance. Is a big variable, and unfortunately the Treasurer, who, you know, as time goes by, we're sort of seeing him for what he is, and that's not some economic genius but a political genius. He's trying to sort of gaslight the economy. Oh, it's weak. We've been seeing it. I mean, he's been talking about the world economy going into recession for 2 years when it hasn't and been far from it. And he's gaslighting us all by saying the economy's weak, so therefore this is why I can go and throw this money around. He's getting heaps of money. You got to remember, the people who benefit most from inflation, at least in initially, is the government. They're swimming in money.
Because of?
Well, the tax bracket. The tax bracket creep is them getting heaps of revenues. And, of course, we've also got good exports and various things. So he's got this money. He's going to get a surplus, which he hopes will get him some credit points as an economic manager, but then he's going to have more money to throw around. And right now he's obviously right in the midst of planning all the budget because it's in May, and those national accounts were the last sort of baseline which they work off. And he's trying to tell us that we need to spend money, which is just pre-election stuff. The Dunkley result gave him a bit of a fright, but I actually think it was pretty good for the government. But, yeah, so they've got those issues, and I think that's dangerous. But that's also why I think it's important that our commentary is better. That's why I sort of ignore the commentators. The core economic journalists are pretty good, but the broader commentary on the economy is the worst I've ever seen it in my career, and it's because it's been heavily affected by people's political views and ideology. The pressure on the RBA is just unbearable. We're wrecking that institution. It's one of the best institutions in our society in the last 30 years, a big part of our modern prosperity, and we're wrecking it. So, look, there's still some – I just think our politics is as bad as it's ever been, and this government's, you know, obviously The Voice was a major turning point for them. But, you know, in golf, if you have a bogey, you've got to bounce back with at least a par. They had a bogey and they're not bouncing back. So I think this government's – it's really this next election is very contestable.
So much to unpack here. And this has just been a moment of Warren Hogan in full flight. I think Tech Live is the you are the only guest on Tech Live, Warren Hogan, who talks about a particular person in politics. And I think if anyone cares to listen to all your podcasts since 2019, the Treasurer, who has been just two people in that time?
It's Frydenberg. Morrison, I think, would have been.
Yeah, I think we've had three.
Yeah.
And
oh, no, he was the Prime Minister, no. So it was Frydenberg and Chalmers. No,
yep.
We only had two.
Yep, so we've had two. But the Treasurer comes up as a topic.
Well, they're the Chief Economist of Australia. Yeah. And typically they're not very good economists.
Let's hear a bit. let's hear it for the RBA. Why don't you talk about that, and then we'll move into the business versus consumer economy.
Yeah, so first of all, for everyone out there, Michelle Bullock is – going to do the right thing. She's been in that institution. I don't think she ever thought she was going to be governor. And she's ended up having to do the job, but she's had the courage late in her career to take on what is a huge task. A huge task. She's trying to reform it while keeping all the good bits. But this, as I said, the politicisation of monetary policy. And when I say that, I'm not talking about the Treasurer or the Prime Minister trying to influence them directly. Although that may be happening, I don't think it is. I wouldn't be that stupid. It's the commentariat. It's rates up bad, rates down good. The ideology, the left are really big
you
on this.
You said this, and then and you didn't just, do that.
They just let them get on with it. They're not going. Yeah, and the problem also is that the RBA was a very closed shop. The old model.
Yeah.
I think it's important for people to understand this. The old model was the top people at the RBA, the governor, the deputy governor, the head economics person. They came up with a view on what needed to happen, all based on their view of where the economy is going, which is an inherently difficult thing, forecasting. Mm. and then the way the model worked was that the government appointed eight eminent Australians with a track record of not only being very, very effective but caring about this country to provide oversight to make sure those people were doing the right thing. That was the model. The board members weren't there to be better economists and to second guess. They could give some insight into what they're seeing in their business.
Just general governance.
General oversight that they're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
They've decided they want to change all that and they need more experts in there. Well, the government's appointed two union officials, so I'm not sure if they're actual experts. But anyway, she's...
There it goes again, as an aside. Yeah.
whatever ends up playing out, and it will be interesting to see, I certainly will have the popcorn on hand. I can assure everyone that Michelle Bullock is going to do everything she can to do what the RBA has always done, and that is do what is the right thing now with monetary policy, with the interest rates, for the Australian community as a whole over the long term. Because the whole point of it is that there are times when there is a need for some short-term pain for long-term gain. Or more importantly, if you shirk that short-term pain, there'll be much more significant ramifications down the track. So if my fears of our rates not being high enough are right and we see this economy start to come back, she'll lift rates. Mm. And she'll do it judiciously.
Mm.
I think we're still in good hands, but she's going to be under a huge amount of pressure.
And I wonder if part of the pressure, I'm just thinking, is the demographics of Australia now, because the baby boomers and potentially the younger Gen X, older Gen X, remember the recession of the early 90s. And even vaguely interest rates, some people bought their houses in the 80s when the interest rates were 16-18%.
Mm.
And there's a whole group of people who haven't experienced pain like this.
Mm.
And as you say, not really wanting to go through it or understanding why it's important.
Well, understanding why we've got to avoid that situation. Mm. In the United States, they had to put the economy into recession in 1979. Jimmy Carter didn't like it. Ronald Reagan did. Then they had to put it into recession again in 1981, which when Ronald Reagan was in power and he didn't like it. They had two bad recessions to get rid of that inflation. We had a bad one in the early 80s. It didn't do the trick. We had to have a full-blown financial crisis in the early 90s
with
unemployment going from 5 to 11% in the blink of an eye, collapsing businesses all over the economy, destroying people's livelihoods to get rid of the inflation. So I put forward the proposition, let's not get it in the system in the first place. Yeah. Unfortunately, we sort of have let it get in there. Not as bad as the 70s and 80s, but it's in there. You can see it. It's going to be a great test for her. But the demographics is actually fascinating. This is one of the key messages that I've been taking to the business people, anyone who cares to listen for quite a while now, is that the retirement of the baby boom is one of the most profound events in our lifetimes. It fundamentally changes the way the economy works, and we're seeing it. It is labour shortages. We know about ageing. We know about slowing population growth. The government's intergenerational reports have been great. They've brought us in, you know, informed us about this and helped the government think about it. But the one problem with the intergenerational report is it doesn't talk about what does it mean for business and the private sector. And the big thing is labour shortages.
Yeah.
So the thing is this thing called the dependency ratio, and that is the ratio of people who don't work who to those that do work. And it's been falling for 50 years. And so every year more and more people working in the economy means there's downward pressure on wages, but there's people there available to provide the services needed for everyone. Well, it's going the other way. Mm. And so, you know, we've got all these people out there consuming still, but less and less, relatively less and less people who can provide it. That's why we have labour shortages. It's not because the borders are shut in the pandemic. It's because of a demographic long-term 50-year cycle swing. This is going to get worse and worse and worse. This is why businesses need to invest in labour-saving technology. We're going to be offshoring. There's all these processes. But right now, of course, it's actually making it very hard for economists with their models based on the last 10 years or 20 years of data or what, not taking into consideration this, to get a good handle on it. It's why they've been, I think, quite poor in the last few years, why I got forecaster of the year, because I did take it into consideration. There's a lot more demand in the economy than the traditional model would tell you. And that's also gets down to another bit more cheeky view on baby boomers, is that there's two types. And you mentioned the Gen X. We could probably start to think of some of them. But the first 10 years of baby boomers are really affected by World War II, and they're now 75 plus.
Yep.
It's actually the ones from the mid-50s to the mid-60s who are more affected by the Vietnam War and the counterculture. Mm. They're the ones who lived for retirement. Mm. They're the ones who are looking for a 10 or 15-year period from in retirement where they actually have the best time of their life, and yep, they've got the money, and yep, they are spending it right now, traveling the world, going out to dinner, and that's why this economy is holding up. Well, part of the reason.
Mm.
But we've got to understand that it's an important process. I mean, they're going to start to get to 75 and need that next sort of genuine aged care support.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is right now we've got so-called retirees who aren't working, but they've got money and they're spending. And that's a big part of why this economy is doing better.
Really interesting. Really,
it is interesting. And it's part of why a lot of economists have just, you know, got this, have underestimated this economy.
Yeah, really, really interesting. So a last thought, you were talking about the difference between a consumer-led and a business-led economy. Do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, so this has been a consumer-led slowdown. If you look at in the last 40 years, we've had consumption. It hasn't grown, and we now know it didn't grow in 23 in real terms. It did not grow. It only happened four times previously, at the start of the pandemic, in the GFC in 2008, in the early 90s recession, the financial crisis I talked about, and the early 80s recession. In each of those four downturns, business investment on average fell by 16%. Last year, business investment rose by 7.4%. So the thing is, when the consumer is historically sort of weak like it is now, it's actually because something else is driving the economy into recession, i.e. a collapse in business spending, credit crunch, commercial property problems, whatever it is. The consumer gets the blowback because people lose their jobs, they get frightened, they stop spending. But they're 55% of the economy. They're actually an anchor. So what is unique about this cycle is we've just squeezed household incomes, broad-based consumer belt tightening, and the whole economy slowed just because of consumer spending. Meanwhile, businesses are out there still investing, governments are still investing and spending, and our export markets are doing well. So it's a very different cycle, and of course this has profound implications for what's next, but also it reflects a bigger picture shift. There's another big shift going on, and that is the consumer-led economy of the last 30 years, I think, is a thing of the past. It doesn't mean consumption and consumers aren't important, but the marginal player in the economy for the next decade is going to be businesses investing for the energy transition, investing to deal with labour shortages, AI, deglobalisation, supply chain, whatever it is. It'll be the business community that leads this economy, and we really haven't had that for a long time. Therefore, businesses are always there, of course. So, yeah, this is a very different economy, and you really need to be thinking about these big secular changes going on if you want to sort of have any hope of understanding where we're headed. I think the RBA is a little bit wedded to models, which are not working great, as I discussed, but they're smart enough to understand this, and, you know, hopefully they listen to me and I point him in the right direction. The previous governor did. I told him all about the demographics, and he quoted quoted some demographic work in his next speech. So, but anyway, the fact is our economy's changing. I'm very bullish. I'm bullish on productivity because of this need to invest in labour-saving technology. And, of course, productivity is what drives not just real wages, it drives profit growth. So we've got a tricky period to get back onto this even keel, to get the economy back on an even balance, and that might take another couple of years. But the decade ahead, assuming our politicians behave both here and overseas, promises to be one of great wealth creation. And, of course, we're going to deal with some of these big other problems such as the environment and so forth. So I think it's every reason to be optimistic, particularly in this country. And I think the Australian business community is going to be a leading light in all of this.
Warren, that was great. You saw a few things. You make the complex simple.
Thank you.
You're always entertaining in the process, and we never have any doubt about what you actually think about things, which is great. And you know I love the optimistic. You always manage to come in here. I think I had one phone call that I really remember at the beginning of the pandemic. You were the one who told me in February 2020, you said, you know, there'll be a period when people don't leave their houses this year. But you had one phone call when you said, what are you hearing? What are people? And I know that behind the scenes you influenced what happened to this economy during the pandemic.
Yeah, the JobKeeper. Working hard with the New South Wales government to convince the feds to do it.
And I know you played a real part in that.
Yeah. No, it was good. It worked. I think they did too much. But anyway,
enough for another topic. But finishing on an optimistic note, really good and very interesting for business. And I think every single Australian and New Zealand small business needs to listen to this podcast and listen to you.
Fantastic.
So Warren Hogan, fantastic to see you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Stephanie. It's great to be with you.
So that's Tech Live for today. CEOs are in the business of making decisions, and leadership is the art of execution. I'm Stephanie Christopher, and look forward to talking to you next time.